The headlines this hour. Millions of Muslims from across the globe are converging on the Iraqi holy city of Karbala to commemorate Arba'in. Pyongyang says it has staged what it calls a simulated tactical nuclear attack drill in response to joint military war games by the U.S. and South Korea. Also coming up, thousands rally in front of the French military base in Niger to renew calls for the withdrawal of French forces from the African country. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Millions of Muslims from across the globe are converging on the Iraqi holy city of Karbala to commemorate Arba'in, the 40th day after the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam and the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. People from all walks of life are marching toward the holy city, most notably from Iran. Senior Iranian government officials have made multiple visits to the border crossings in recent days to ensure a smooth passage for pilgrims to and from Iraq. Experts say it is significant to keep alive the movement of Karbala, which is a movement against terrorism, fascism, and despotism. Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in 680 AD, while fighting courageously for justice against the much larger army of then a tyrant ruler, Yazid. Will Iran and Iraq inaugurate the construction project of a major railroad as part of a growing partnership between Tehran and Baghdad? The Shalamcheb-Basra Connection Project will link the major port city of Basra in southern Iraq to Iran's vast railway network through the Shalamcheb border crossing. It is estimated that the project will take between 18 to 24 months. The project had been under discussion for years before an agreement was reached in 2021. It was inaugurated by Iran's first Vice President, Mohammad Mokhber, and the Iraqi Prime Minister, Mohammad Shia al-Sudani. Mokhber says the project will be completed over the next 2 years. Iran and Iraq are political and economic partners and are determined to enhance their bilateral trade relations. Iranians are marking the National Day of Fight Against British Colonialism, commemorating the 109th anniversary of the martyrdom of Rais Ali Delvari, a great national hero and independence fighter who led the anti-colonial struggle in southern Iran. However, this year the occasion is even more special, as many Iranians have had the chance to mark this day, where he has been laid to rest. Gisumi Shahpati reports.
Remembering a national hero, a symbol of resistance. Many Iranians this year are marking the National Day Against British Colonialism at the resting place of a man who organized a popular resistance movement against British troops that had invaded Iran in 1915. Rais Ali Delvari's martyrdom anniversary has fallen just days before Arba'in, allowing pilgrims who are taking part in the Arba'in walk to mark the occasion at his resting place in Wadi As-Salam Cemetery in the Iraqi city of Najaf, where the pilgrimage begins.
Rais Ali Delvari was a hero just like Martyr Qasem Soleimani in our days. Actually, as Iranians, I think we're lucky that we had quite a number of these freedom fighters. For example, the Jangad movement of Gilan and the Tangistanis who formed the main resisting power against the British Empire in southern Iran.
We know that he was a young man living in the city of Delvar in Bushehr province, and he successfully fought against the British invaders. That is why we have to keep his memory alive and educate our young generation about him.
Martyr Rais Ali Delvari played an important role in the fight against colonialism. As Iranians, we owe him our independence and freedom.
Rais Ali Delvari was born in 1261 in Delvar in Bushehr. After the sudden entrance of British forces into the southern province in 1915, he led the Iranian army in their fight against British colonialists. Rais Ali Delvari was ultimately killed by Anglo-Indian forces following months of bloody clashes. Today, his home has been turned into a museum and registered as a national heritage in Iran. And to commemorate him, his martyrdom anniversary, which usually falls on the 3rd of September, is marked on the Iranian calendar as a national day of fight against British colonialism. Decades after his martyrdom, Rais Ali Delvari is still an inspiration, not just for Iranians, but for freedom fighters worldwide. Isum Shahmadi, Wadi Salam Cemetery, Najaf.
Fresh details have emerged from a major Israeli sabotage attempt against Iran's defense industries that was thwarted by the country's intelligence. Military officials say that a professional team led by Mossad was trying to equip missile connectors with explosive circuits, which could then be programmed to blow up at a specific time.
It's a plot out of a Hollywood movie, but with serious repercussions. A shadow war between Israel and Iran. This one involves an Israeli plot to sabotage Iran's defense industry, including missiles, the biggest military sabotage attempt against Iran in the past 100 years. It is one that failed, however, just in the nick of time. The agency's statement reveals the scope of the operation. The intelligence unit of the defense ministry thwarted one of the largest sabotage plots targeting Iran's missile, aviation, and airspace military industry. This sabotage was carried out under the guidance of the Zionist intelligence services and their agents. A network of agents sought to introduce defective parts into the production of advanced missiles, specifically defective connectors from abroad. The defective parts were discovered by the Defense Ministry Information Protection. The plan was to equip these connectors with explosive circuits. If that was done successfully, connectors could be programmed to explode remotely at any time.
The Israeli spy agency Mossad has been at the heart of anti-Iran plots for decades. Simply put, it has targeted Iran in order to stop its advancements in a variety of fields. But apparently, what has been of interest is Iran's nuclear program and defense industry. This includes targeting scientists and nuclear facilities.
Under the false pretext of preventing Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons, Mossad has been carrying out a campaign of sabotage and cyber attacks on Iran's civilian nuclear program for quite some time. One of the notorious ones was the Stuxnet virus. In April 2011, Iranian government official Gholam Reza Jalali stated that an investigation had concluded that both the United States and Israel were behind the Stuxnet attack. Mossad has also methodically assassinated and murdered Iranian nuclear scientists, from magnetic bombs attached to the side of their cars, to the use of poison, and allegedly the use of a killer robot remotely used as an assassin. Additionally, Israel has also targeted Iran's nuclear facilities. Israel's targeting of Iran's defense industry, in particular its drones and missile program, does make sense from Israel's point of view. Iran has made extraordinary advancements in these two fields and military hardware overall. But all of these destructive actions, which Israel has not claimed responsibility for, has not been able to stop Iran's advancements. From Israel's perspective, it makes strategic sense, though only a temporary fix. There's an Iranian saying that says, "Don't play with the lion's tail." Iran may have thwarted these acts of sabotage, but for how long will its patience last when it comes to Israel?
Tens of thousands of Israelis are back on the streets of Tel Aviv for the 35th consecutive week. Protest against what they call a judicial coup.
I came out here today with my family so that we can protest against the judicial coup. It's a crucial time right now. We need to come out. We need to be in the streets. We have a big vote in about 2 weeks, and I can't tell you that I'm hopeful, but we are not going to stop coming out until we're able to turn back and make sure that everyone has someone else watching over what they're doing. Nobody has the power to make changes at their whim.
Mass protests against the so-called judicial overhaul have been ongoing since it was proposed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extreme far-right cabinet back in January. In August, Israel's Supreme Court began hearing the first in a series of appeals linked to the overhaul, which set up an unprecedented domestic crisis. Israel is now facing public unrest, labor strikes, and mutiny by some members of its military. The opposition believe the cabinet is aiming to weaken the judiciary and to prevent it from being able to maintain checks and balances on the cabinet. They say the protests will continue until they are able to repeal the legislation. Israeli troops have violently clashed with Eritrean refugees using live fire and stun grenades against the demonstrators who were protesting against the government in the East African nation. Some 160 people were injured, some of them critically. Many others were arrested. The violence broke out around an event organized by the Eritrean embassy to mark Revolution Day, which commemorates the start of the Eritrean War of Independence against Ethiopia in 1961. President Isaias Afwerki has ruled since Eritrea gained independence in 1993. Human rights groups have condemned his government as being highly repressive. Eritreans make up the majority of the more than 30,000 African asylum seekers in Israel. The Tel Aviv regime has been under fire by rights groups for racism and discrimination against non-white individuals. Political commentator Netva Freeman says Zionism promotes a system that conflates ethnicity and race.
The issue is predicated on the fact that we're dealing with settler colonialism, the system of settler colonialism where land is taken away from an indigenous people, and all settler colonial states are predicated on a racism against, and these are European settlers, and Israel's really no different than that. It's modeled after U.S. settler colonialism. Both Israel and settler colonial South Africa under apartheid South Africa are modeled after the United States, and the complexity becomes when things advance and racism is no longer is frowned upon globally. Then they have to fend it, protect it as or defend it as something else. In Israel, the complexity is that Israel Zionism promotes something that conflates ethnicity, race, and nationality and nationhood. So as a settler colony, it also gives the sanctity of a Jewish people that's also predicated on religion as well. And so this makes it even more complex, but at the same time, there has to be this caste system for settler colonialism and for the justification of the theft and the sustenance of settler colonialism and Zionism in this case.
The Democratic People's Republic of Korea confirms it staged a, quote, simulated tactical nuclear attack drill at the weekend with mock atomic warheads attached to two long-range cruise missiles. The missiles were fired from the country's west coast toward the Yellow Sea. Pyongyang said the operation on Saturday was a counteraction drill in response to the joint military activity by the U.S. and South Korea. The launches come 3 days after the DPRK fired a pair of short-range ballistic missiles as part of a similar drill. This comes as Seoul and Washington have ramped up their joint military exercises with advanced stealth jets and U.S. strategic assets. Pyongyang says the U.S. and the South are pursuing, quote, confrontation hysteria, adding that it views such war games as a rehearsal for invasion. Washington and Seoul claim that they are defensive in nature. Of course, one of Frank Smith says the U.S.-backed U.N. sanctions against the Democratic People's Republic of Korea are an impediment to Washington's engagement with Pyongyang.
The U.S. always says it's open to negotiations, but really the big elephant in the room for the United States, of course, is the U.S.-supported United Nations Security Council sanctions against North Korea that prevent North Korea from trading with the international community. North Korea has said on many occasions that it will negotiate with the U.S. if it drops its hostile policy. It views the promotion and continued sanctions against North Korea as hostile. It prevents North Korea from developing its economy and has some other consequences that go far beyond the sort of goals of those sanctions to make it difficult for North Korea, for example, to grow its own food. If it doesn't have access to oil, it doesn't have the drivers in the economy that that fuel tractors, for example. So it has a whole knock-on effect that strike the North Korean people and not necessarily the leadership. So again, it's these United Nations Security Council sanctions that U.S. might have to, and certainly the Council should look at, suspending in order to encourage North Korea to come to the negotiating table, draw down the tension, and really put things on another foot moving forward.
Not to Taiwan, domestic flights and ferry services to surrounding islands have been canceled as Typhoon Haikyuu makes landfall on eastern Taiwan. The Civil Aeronautics Administration says 37 international flights have been canceled for Sunday. Taiwan's President Tsai Ing says that this is the first typhoon to make landfall on the island and to cross its central mountain range in 4 years. Almost 3,000 people have been evacuated, mainly in the south and the east. The military has mobilized soldiers and equipment to help with flood relief and evacuation efforts. Thousands of people in Niger have held an anti-French rally demanding that the former colonial ruler withdraw his military personnel from the West African nation. The demonstration was held in front of a French military base in the capital Niamey. It came a day after the military rulers accused Paris of blatant interference in the country's affairs. 1,500 French troops are currently stationed in Niger. The junta in power has ordered French troops to leave the West African nation until September 3. Niger also last week called on the French ambassador to leave the country within 48 hours. Paris brushed aside the decision, arguing that the junta has no authority to make such a decision. On July 26, the military takeover ousted President Mohamed Bazoum and installed General Abdurrahmane Tchiani, the leader of the presidential guard, as head of state. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of law.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, September 3rd. 2023. I'm Atefe Irfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views and outlooks are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the most. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. As I always say, please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and you just heard a piece of beautiful Iranian music. And we've received reception reports from around the world from Alexei Kolakov from Russia. Alexei Kolakov is one of our old and regular listeners. And we have also reception reports from Alex Robert from Brazil, and Anand Moham from India has sent us reception report. So, Alexei Anandan, Alex, thank you for the reception reports. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And a special thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters from around the world. A special thanks to Ding Lu from China, to Roni Hossein from Bangladesh, to Alexei Kolakov from Russia. Zach Alvarez from the Philippines has sent us a piece of email. And the last but not the least in this edition of Listeners Special is an email from Chris Malboff, one of our old and regular listeners from Canada. So stay with us, please. After a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Ding Lu from China has sent us a piece of email. Ding Lu says, Dear Radio IRIB or IRIB English Radio, I'm a listener from China. Today I received your English program signal at 1920 UTC. Here I want to apply for two paper QSL cards from the Radio IRIB. If there are souvenirs with Radio IRIB's logo, it would be even better. I like your station programs very much. I also hope to get two paper QSL cards or EQSL from IRIB Radio. Looking forward to receiving your reply. Thanks. Best wishes. First of all, salam and warm greetings from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Ding Lu, from China. Much gratitude to you for this email. So, you were successful in catching up the signals of IRIB English Radio in China. Good news! And also, it's good to hear that you are pleased with the programs, as you said. You like the station's programs very much. I was wondering if you could tell us which programs you were interested in. Maybe in the upcoming letters or emails, you could tell us. And at the end, an EQSL or electronic QSL will be sent to you very soon. Ding Lu from China. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So let's see what Roni Hossein from Bangladesh says. Roni says, Hello, my dear friends. I have attached the report of the reception with information on the quality of the reception of your station in my area. I hope to receive a reply from your side. Thank you in advance. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran. And thank you very much for this email, Roni Hossein from Bangladesh. Thank you for your commitment to IRIB English Radio. Please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as verification to this email. So you attached a report of the reception with information on the quality of the reception of IRIB English Radio in your area. Thank you for that. Roni Hossein from Bangladesh, thank you very much for this email. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. So after a short break, I will be back with you. We have a piece of email from one of our old and regular listeners, from Alexei Kolakov from Russia. Alexei says, Hello and good day. My name is Alexei Kolakov and I am sending a reception report from Lipetsk in Russia. I ask you to confirm it by the paper QSL or EQSL to my email. Thank you in advance. Salam and warm greetings to you, Alexei Kolakov from Russia. Appreciations to you for this email, of course. An EQSL will be sent to you very soon as verification and confirmation through this writing, through this email. Anyway, we wish you luck, and we are looking forward to hearing from you soon. So let's see what Zach Alvarez from the Philippines says. Zach says, "Dear IRIB Radio, I have received and heard your station here in Dos Marinas, Philippines. I was monitoring your station yesterday at 15 to 1520 UTC. The program was about Islamic issues and gave us listeners some information in this regard. The signal was fair here in the Philippines. Thank you for the precious efforts. Yours truly." First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Zach Alvarez from the Philippines. Many thanks for this writing. It's good to hear that you could listen to our programs from the Philippines in Dos Marinas. I don't know where the exact location of this place is, but I was wondering if you could tell us the exact location and share your information with us. Anyway, so you said the program was about Islamic issues. Thank you for letting us know about that. And you said the signal was fair. It's good to hear that. Your compliments, Zach Alvarez, gives us more power and incentive to continue our path. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Zach Alvarez from the Philippines. And please accept our electronic QSL as confirmation to your email. After a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back from Chris Malbo from Canada. We've received an email. Chris Malbo is one of our old and regular listeners, so let's see what he says. "Hello and greetings from British Columbia, Canada. Hope this finds you well. I haven't been able to listen to your station in quite some time, but I'm just returning to becoming a regular listener. Have a good day and a good week ahead. Sincerely, Chris Malbo from British Columbia, Canada." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran. And many thanks for writing to us again. You said you were not able to listen to IRIB English Radio in quite some time, but you're now returning to becoming a regular listener again. And it's good to hear that. So please accept our EQSL or electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. As I always say, art is long, but life is short. Yes, we have to say goodbye. But before that, I do send my warm appreciations and gratitudes to those of you, dear listeners, that kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Alexei Kolakov from Russia, Alex Robert from Brazil, Anand Mohan from India, Ding Lu from China, Ronnie Hossein from Bangladesh, also Zach Alvarez from the Philippines, and Chris Malbo from Canada. Dear listeners, please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The shadow war between Israel and Iran has been ongoing for decades. Just recently, Iran foiled one of the biggest military sabotage attempts against it in the past 100 years. It involved an Israeli plot to sabotage Iran's defense industry, including its missile systems. Iran has accused the Israeli Mossad agency, although Israel has not admitted to this terrorist act. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the number of times that Israel has committed acts of terrorism against Iran, resulting in death and destruction, and how it yet still continues to act with impunity in the face of the silence of the international community. First, let me introduce our guests. Saab Shahat, author and West Asia expert, joins us from Belfast. Also joining us, Jamal Wakim, professor of international relations at the Lebanese University, who joins us from Beirut. Welcome to you both. Saab Shahat, over to you. I had to read over the details of this sabotage attack a number of times in order to get the depth of the type of destruction that this would have incurred. Based on what we have, defective parts into the production of advanced missiles, specifically defective connections or connectors from abroad. But what Iran's deputy defense minister said is quite not only alarming but eye-opening, that they had attempted, Israel's Mossad agency, to put an explosive and undetectable circuit inside these missiles. So if these missiles have something that blows up, I'm guessing the missile itself is going to blow up, and that would cause not only destruction but also deaths. What's your reading into how long this was probably in the works and the fact that Iran defeated this terrorist act?
This is a very sophisticated network was deployed by the Mossad, and it needs Western intelligence agency to help in that. Because that means they need to infiltrate the chain of supplies in here, and most countries in the world, even the United States of America, is not sufficient enough locally for minerals or parts to produce all the necessary parts for its own military equipment to stay ahead of the rest. We notice the United States of America for minerals and other rare materials, they depend heavily on country like China. So you expect in Iran, which is nearly after the Iranian Revolution, developed itself heavily under even the sanctions and the blockades after the revolution. Iran today, which used to be heavily before the revolution, dependent on Western and United States of America's wide kind of military supplies. Today, 90% Iran is self-sufficient, and the 10% which is needed parts or elements buys from the outside. There, where is the plug-in, the intelligence services try to reach and to plug in its own agents inside so they can infiltrate the civilian and military infrastructure inside Iran. As rightly you said, they don't care if they're gonna when the missile system explodes. They don't care about the civilians' lives or that, because it's in their habit from the beginning. They were assassinating some of the brightest minds in Iran, scientists in universities or experts in military or in civilian fields. So this is part of them in weakening this state who became independent since 1979.
All right. So Jamal Wakim, not only were the missiles targeted, we also have the fact that these parts could be also used in Iran's drones. All right, yeah. So we're looking at missiles and drones to have been their focus. Now, Iran has had missiles and drones for quite some time. Why do you think that Israel has chosen this time for them to execute this terrorist act in targeting Iran's drones and missile capabilities?
Well, actually, Israel's targeting of Iran's capabilities, especially the missile and the drone capabilities, isn't something new. They have been trying to curtail all efforts by Iran to develop its defense systems. And lately, Iran has become very developed on the technological level in manufacturing these drones and missiles, which have become also part of the arsenal of the axis of resistance, including the resistance movement in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Palestine. So that's why the Israeli Mossad is trying to target these capabilities, regardless of the victims that might fall or the casualties that might fall victim of such acts, even if they were civilians. This is not the first time that the Israelis do that. It has been part of their strategy and of their tactics to curb the attempts of certain Arab and Islamic powers to develop their own capabilities in order to defend themselves against Israeli aggression. If we go back to the 1960s, we see how the Israelis have targeted, for example, the missile program in Egypt back then, and how they exploded several explosives in Egypt to target German scientists who have been working in developing, for example, the missile system and the nuclear capabilities of Egypt during the days of Nasser. Later on, they did the same, for example, in Iraq when they targeted the nuclear facility in Iraq in the early 1980s. After the invasion of Iraq by the United States, the Israelis and the Americans have targeted the Iraqi scientists, for example. Thousands of them were assassinated without the media mentioning this. And of course, they have been doing the same thing with Iran over the past 40 years, because this has been a continuous effort by the Israelis and the Americans, of course, to damage Iran's attempts to defend itself, to develop its own defense system, and to rely on itself and not on others to sustain an independent political option and its sovereignty, right, of course.
Well, I'm just wondering, with all that you said, which is, thank you so much for putting up the rap sheet by what I would understand if I was not even slightly aware of any of this, that you have an entity that has a rap sheet that that runs like somebody who should be in prison. I mean, what gives Iran the right? I'm sorry. What gives Israel the right, Sabshath, for it to have, from what we understand, an industry defined in the Mossad configuration to go and target assassinations, bombs, what have you, based on what our guest there said?
You see, it all goes to the Islamic Revolution in Iran. Before the Islamic Revolution, Iran used to be a country which is its resources don't belong to the people of Iran. The resources were belong to the imperialist entities, which is the United States, and before that, even the United Kingdom, Britain. Once I said in a kind of conference in a university in England, a figure, and I said, I challenge anybody to prove me wrong. After the Second World War, the British used nearly 40% of their budget to rebuild Britain after the destruction which is inflicted in it by the Nazi Germany. Only 40% of that came from one country, from Iran. You can understand how much they lost. And the United States of America, after that, they see Iran was the jewel of the crown which they lost. And all of that, they try today, they do their best to do a change regime to whatever, to bring that country, which is full of resources and talent as well, back to their hegemony. So this is the way the West lives and progresses. An entity like Israel, it's a function state, and that function state is in there as advanced military base for the United States of America and the Western countries to use for their interest. The interest in here, the resources, and the control of the area, and that is the target of Israel. And Israel will always, to survive, have to serve their masters as it's what is required from them. They require by the from Israel, by the United States of America and the rest, to destabilize Iran, to create havoc in Iran, to make sure the people try to revolt against the system. Such a thing, which is a duty of the Zionist entity linked to it and attached to it, I mean, by the United States of America.
Well, what you have over here, Saab Shah, is the pretext that Israel has used in terms of the different terrorist campaigns that has executed against Iran on the premise that they need to stop Iran's what it is a civilian nuclear program, which Israel claims is an Iranian weapons program in the nuclear arena. But isn't it quite ironic that Israel is not a signatory of the NPT, possesses nuclear weapons, and yet accuses Iran of going after nuclear weapons and uses that as its premise to attack Iran in different terrorist activities?
The more ridiculous is that.
This is for Saab Shah. If you have, I'm sorry. This is for Jamal Wakim. I'm sorry about that, Saab Shah. Jamal Wakim, go ahead.
All right, I got confused. Can you repeat the question?
The gist of my question is, ironic that Israel, who is armed with nuclear weapons, is using that premise against Iran, who not only has a civilian nuclear program, has also called for a West Asia region free of nuclear weapons, and has a civilian nuclear program, yet Israel accuses it of it being weaponized.
Yeah, actually, Israel fears that the Arabs and Muslim countries build their own capabilities, even if they were civil capabilities. Well, if we go back to the early 1950s, when Nasser led his coup d'etat in 1952 and took over power, all he had in mind was to build the economy of Egypt. So, and this is what he told to the American envoy at the time who came on peace proposal. So this American envoy went to Ben-Gurion, the founder of the Zionist entity, and told him that Nasser wants to focus more on internal economic development. And this is when Ben-Gurion said, this is what worries me most. Actually, Israel doesn't want for the Arab and Muslim countries and also third world countries to build their own capabilities, for it is a tool, as your guest said, it's a tool in the hands of the imperialist Western powers to dominate the non-Western world, especially the Arab-Muslim world. So in order to dominate the, these countries, they want to forbid them and prevent them from building their own capabilities, economic, technological, and of course, armed capabilities. So that's why, for example, Israel, that has hundreds of nuclear warheads and that have declared on several occasions that is willing, it's willing to use these capabilities against its quote-unquote enemies, is targeting, for example, the civilian nuclear program in Iran. This is what it did, for example, with also other capabilities. For example, this is the reason why they assassinated Iraqi scientists who were working in civilian sectors, in various civilian sectors, including the medical sector.
Sure.
So Israel wants to, and this is what it did also with Iraqi scientists, not only working in the military field or the in the nuclear program, but also in other sectors and programs. So Israel wants to keep these countries underdeveloped. They want to keep these countries weak in order for these countries to remain under the Western hegemony.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
So, Sapshath, how is Israel doing at this point? We're looking at what, over four decades with Jamal Waqim, the clearly outlined all these different ways and terrorist, acts to prevent countries from advancing. I can talk on behalf of Iran, and we can see how Iran is reaching its almost full potential when it comes to missiles, when it comes to drones, when it comes to its nuclear program. So, all these different ways that Israel tried to prevent Iran from advancing hasn't really worked that much. Why does Israel keep pursuing a failed plan?
You see, in the 90s, the Americans convinced, when there was collapse of the Soviet Union, a lot of corrupt Russians in the Soviet military complex to let a lot of these scientists immigrate to the Zionist entity undercover of at the time what Gorbachev said, allowing the Jewish people, Russian Jews, to go to the Israel. And lots of these capabilities which developed inside Israel were Soviet military complex, which the Americans managed to shift most of it after the collapse of the Soviet Union over there. That's part of it. But when you see, on the other hand, as you're alluding to Iran, the progress made in Iran after the sanctions, the blockades, the war imposed on Iran 8 years, Iran have to develop itself. It's, like live or die. And this were developed capabilities. Like, I'll give you an example. Today, Iran developed capabilities to intercept targets cutting edge, like we're talking about the U.S.-made F-35 fighter jet. This capabilities is there today. The Iranian scientists developed that to detect and target and intercept such powerful and cutting edge fighter jets. Sure. Today, the Iranian drones, okay, they are wanted by the Europeans themselves. They're seeking to buy them because they saw what is done in Ukraine. So Israel finds itself going downhill. Israel developed by the American military complex and Western military complex, adding to the Soviet Union military complex.
Okay. First of all, Iran's official stance is that it does not and has not sold drones to Russia, but that's a whole other point, but I figured I should say that. All right, so the U.S. involvement here, Sobshoff, both of you have mentioned one way or another that it is involved. One thing for sure is the Stuxnet virus, where it was proven that both the U.S. and Israel intel services worked together to create that. How deep is the U.S. involvement when it comes to Israeli terrorist activities? Do you think that Israel actually seeks for U.S. Approval when it goes ahead, seeks U.S. cooperation, or the level and the extent of U.S. involvement, in your opinion here? Not Sobshoff. I'm sorry, Jamal Wakim.
Well, first of all, we need to understand the fact that Israel acts as an extension of the United States. Of course, there are times of lack of coordination, but this entail details. But when it comes to the grand strategy, Israel is an extension of the United States and acts within the framework of the U.S. Strategy. That's why we need first to see why the United States wants to target the Iranian capabilities, because the United States is an imperialist power. It doesn't want for other powers to build their own defenses, their own capabilities, in order for it to be capable of dominating or extending its hegemony over these countries. That's one thing. And if we go back to the early 1950s, when this is the reason why, for example, it engineered the coup d'etat against the Prime Minister Mossadegh back then. So if we understand the U.S. policy, especially towards Iran, they want to control the Middle East, as which is the region stretching from the Atlantic Ocean in the west all the way to the borders of China in the east, as part of their plan, of the U.S. plan, to control the crossroads of international trade routes in the world. And controlling this region will also block the Eurasian powers from having access to the East Mediterranean and to Africa. And this is the reason why they keep trying to destroy Iran, to topple the Islamic revolution and the Islamic Republic in Iran, because it has been standing against U.S. Hegemony and standing for its own sovereignty.
Sobshoff, final question to you, and it's probably one of the most important ones. This is what a former Iranian ambassador to the IAEA has said. Quote, not only will we respond decisively, but we will also certainly leave no option for Iran but to reconsider its transparency measures and cooperation policy. When do you think Israel is going to cross that red line where Iran is going to think, all right, that's it, it's one too many?
You see, Israel, it cannot act whatsoever. I confirm what Joachim was saying there. Israel is an extension of the United States of America's army. Israel, to me, is part of the deep state in the United States of America. And whatever Israel acts, it has to be part of the United States of America's policy. The United States of America, see, if it sees the Iranian a nuclear project in there as a threat to the American national interest, then the Israel will act on behalf of the national United States national interest. Israel will not act in any other way, even if the United States of America see that is endangering the existence of the Zionist entity itself, but the Americans doesn't want them to act, they will not act.
All right, thank you so much. We're going to have to end it there because of lack of time. Sobshoff, author and West Asia expert from Belfast, thank you so much. And Jamal Wakim, professor of international relations at the Lebanese University from Beirut, thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tahweh and the team, it's goodbye. We'll be right back.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering your doubts and questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
الله هو ذا الرحمن الله هو ذا المنان. لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails to our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. Brother Suhail is with me in the studio for today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Suhail. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you very much.
Okay, Brother Suhail, for today's discussion, we want to talk about maybe an ontological question, and that is about the essence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the nature of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So why is it that we are not allowed to think about on the nature of Allah? Is it so in Islam we are not allowed to think about the nature of Allah?
Yes, it is so in Islam that we are not allowed to think about the nature of Allah.
Why is it so?
The reason is, let's see, when we think about something, what do we intend to do? We put the dimensions that are required for us to be able to perceive that thing.
Yes.
You see?
Yes.
Of which, when you perceive that thing, you become the greater of what you perceive and yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Allah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not limited by the boundaries of time and space, and therefore not limited to the imaginations of the brain and the mind. And it is not possible for a person who is limited to think about a person or a thing that is unlimited. So when we say things like this, we try to implement that because Allah is unlimited.